from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks for the Blue Johnnies. It's Thursday, the 4th of May, and this is Game On. That was Laura Fox in for the Blue Johnnies, of course. Coming up today, we've got big stories in soccer, rugby and US sport. David Snade is in studio, and we'll be joined by Stephen Ferris, Rebecca Cray and Jeff Shepherd between now and 7 o'clock. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that David Snade is with me in studio. It's been a while, but you're back, David, and we're delighted to have you.
Thank you.
You were busy.
I was. Yeah. I don't know if we want to go too personal about
That's your luck. We may as well. Good celebration.
Yeah, no, yeah. My wife gave birth to a baby girl.
Isabella.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been good. Although I was just bragging before we come on there that I've actually had a great week's sleep. So I put the jinx on it there now.
Yeah.
So hopefully the next hour goes better.
It's always good to mark these things, you know. And I always say if I'm gonna ask a woman if she's had a baby, then I'm gonna ask a man if he's had a baby.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah.
That's how I roll.
Thank you.
All about equality. We were getting very excited yesterday over Seamus Coleman's tweet and saying that he didn't have any ACL damage, but it seems like he is going to be out for the rest of the season. But that's only 4 games. But still, I mean. Seamus Coleman injured at his age, it's never a good thing.
I know, yeah. Well, that was one of the main issues when you saw what happened. I know it was one of them where I wasn't actually watching the match live because obviously there was a full schedule of League of Ireland fixtures going on as well. But then you see the video clips that were getting sent around of the collision in the Leicester match and you're thinking, oh my God, like what's this going to be? And thankfully he put it up. Surprisingly enough for Seamus Coleman, I wasn't sure he'd be one for Instagram. But that's where he could have broke the news. But sure, look, you take it and you're kind of thinking, that's great, it's not an ACL. You kind of still felt it was going to be serious considering he went off the pitch on a stretcher. And it was like even funny because even when he was going off, he kind of, like, you actually can see the picture in front of us here in the screen here where he's kind of like, he gives the fist up to the fans and to the players and all. It kind of reminded me of years ago when Kevin Moran went off at an FA Cup semi-final for Manchester United, bloodied and bandied, and all you saw was the fist going up. It kind of just epitomised him as a man. But yeah, because of some of the stuff that's happened with Coleman, even this year with the hamstring injury, like he missed, the previous 4 games, and they got 1 point from those 4 games when he'd been out with a hamstring injury. And he just got on back in and into a vein of form where you're thinking, like, this is the Seamus Coleman of old. Like, it wasn't too long ago, probably the start, we're in the very start of this season and even back in the last season when you had the likes of Jamie Carragher kind of pinpointing him as a bit of a weak link in that defence and that his time was maybe up. But the energy that he'd been bringing to that Everton attack essentially again, that on that right side with Alexander Iwobi, was really developing a kind of potent enough partnership where it was actually one of the few areas where they could actually have a threat. And then you see him go off, and then he says, obviously, it's not the ACL, but then obviously Sean Dyche there saying that, yeah, he doubts that he'll be back before the end of this season, which for Everton fans, it's going to be a huge blow because he provides so much personality to that team that would be needed in the next 4 games because, like, the chances of them staying up now are very, very slim. Like, it looks as if they're searched now to be relegated, especially when you look at their next couple of fixtures as well. And, yeah, I'll be honest, they kind of... No kind of Everton loyalty. So I'm thinking straight away, well, what's going to mean for Ireland?
Yeah,
what's going to mean for
a lot of people are thinking that as well.
You know, so for next month and whether or not there's enough lead in time for him to get back and get fit, because obviously there's going to be a training camp in Turkey before Ireland do play Greece. Like, that's going to be such a big game for Ireland and for Stephen Kenny to try and get a result, and he is someone who they're going to need for that, definitely.
Well, Sean Dyche was speaking to the media and he gave this update on Seamus Coleman.
How relieved are you, first of all, with the good news about Seamus Coleman, the injury not as bad as first feared?
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to keep him out. You know, it's still a ligament injury that needs sorting out, but it's not. Obviously, everyone feared it was his ACL, and it's not, so that's good news, and good news for him.
Do you think he'll be back this season?
I doubt it. I don't think so, no.
Doesn't sound too downbeat there.
No,
I'm thinking in the context of Greece.
it's a strange one with Sean. Like, Sean Dyche, he's one of them where, like, I've been at press conferences with him and you kind of ask him a question and it's almost, he can be very guarded. It's almost as if he thinks he wants to be led down a certain path, and he'll always try and be kind of, keep his cards close to his chest, you know. He can be very kind of tricky sometimes to deal with, not in a kind of in a bad way, but just a kind of just very kind of a straight up fella sometimes. But it's going to be an interesting one now, even with Everton, because you look at Everton that's happening with the club and just the kind of state of disarray they're in terms of, like, with the ownership that's there and the fact that fans obviously want the whole pretty much board to be gone, in terms of the mismanagement that would have happened there down through the years with obviously Bill Kenroy, who was the chairman, and obviously people on the staff, and the fact that, like, there's just so much disharmony there, and they're in this point now where the chances of them getting out of the relegation zone are slim. So they have to now be start planning for what's going to happen next season. And like, it'd be just foolish of them not to be planning for the fact that they're more than likely going to be in the Championship. And I remember speaking to Stephen Ward when Stephen Ward would have been in a Burnley dressing room with Sean Dyche, and they went down in his first season in the Premier League when he brought them up. And it was the year when Danny Ings left to go to join Liverpool, and Kieran Trippier left Burnley to go and sign for Spurs, and they were the kind of two big names who everyone knew was leaving the club. And Dyche got them in the dressing room before one of the matches and said to them, this was Stephen Ward was describing, that he just said, listen, I know you're going to have your agents onto you this week, get out of the club, that try and find somewhere else, stay in the Premier League and all the rest of it, but just believe in me, trust me, I'll get you back up. And it kind of feels as if he's still going to be having that kind of conversation with some of these Everton players. Like, Seamus Coleman is out of contract at the end of this season. Like, he is at an age now with this injury where you're thinking, well, what, it's a precarious situation for him. But like, he's this exact kind of character you would think that needs to be sticking around for that battle for next season, because they're going to be in a situation where, like, clubs, like, I know Everton won the league in the 80s and they've had great success, and like, they would see themselves as this massive club, but clubs who are of a similar size in a lot of people's eyes have sunk to serious depths after leaving the Premier League when they've been in similar kind of disarray. I think teams like Sheffield Wednesday, do you know what I mean? It's been over 25 years since they've been in the Premier League, do you know? And like, you can see something like that happening to the way Everton are at the moment, and even with this new stadium that could be coming, and some of the finance that could bring. But if they're in the Championship and they're struggling and they haven't got that core base there to be able to just get back up very, very quickly, it could be a while before Everton get back into the Premier League, just the way the nature of how football has gone now as well.
Everton fans are not going to like to hear that, for sure. There's crazy things happening in the Premier League from a manager point of view, and we're coming to the end of the season. There's teams trying to stay up, so in a way it's understandable. But if we're looking at the League of Ireland then, it feels like it's not on that long. We've two managers depart in the last week. Colin Healy has resigned as the Cork City manager. Liam Buckley was brought in as the director of football. So there's a lot of questions about timing and what it all means. Well, first of all, let's hear from Liam Buckley. He was speaking to the media today for the first time since he moved to Cork, and he was asked about Colin Healy.
Kirk, I rang Colin myself, and I had a chat with Colin, and I would have loved to have him back here. Bearing in mind he got the First Division Manager of the Year last year, and I presented a trophy to him. And he's a talented manager, he's put a great squad of players together, he's won the league here. It won't be the first or last time he'll go through a batch of losing matches and going through a little bit of a sticky wicket. I've had that myself through my career. But you just have to get through it and whatever. And it's just unfortunate we don't have him. I would have liked him to be here because it just make life a lot easier. But look, it's a challenge now for us to try and regroup with the coaches and just try and get a team out Friday, get them motivated, get a performance, and get the crowd and the fans and get us back to where we belong. It's not at the bottom end of the table. There's a lot of quality players here. But the one thing they're lacking is experience. But they're lacking experience for a reason, because some of them are young. They've only played in the First Division, some of them. Okay, we'll look at it when the window comes around, etc., etc. We might have some injuries or whatever the case may be. There might be a little bit of juggling or whatever. But at this minute in time, looking at what we have, I'd be excited about working with them, because I do see improvement in them. I do see that there's potential to get them better, you know?
So only 13 games played in the Premier Division so far. The Cork City are second from the bottom. Does it feel like a premature move for Healy to depart, for Cork to be bringing in Buckley, for the whole situation that is unfolding down there?
Yeah, it was a strange one, because it feels early at this stage at the season, but then at the same time, a football league, you should not be actually like surprised at all. And it's almost the fact that Cork play St. Pat's on Friday, and it's just sometimes you just have to love the kind of serendipitous nature of how these things work, and the fact that obviously Tim Clancy, he resigned from his job as Pat's manager at the start of the week, and then on the back of what happened, say, with the Bowls result for Cork City, Colin Healy makes that decision to go as well when they got battered 5-0, having been down to 10 men. And like you could have listened after the after that game. Obviously, it was a bit of a bad run, but they've had some decent results as well. They got a win against Dundalk. They got a crazy 4-all draw with Shamrock Rovers, and there was just other moments where, as kind of Liam Buckley alluded to there, where just their lack of experience could have told a little bit. But now you're looking at it from the point of view of what's going to happen next, and it kind of does just feel as if one of the perfect kind of solution from a Cork City point of view is to actually go after now Tim Clancy, who prior to having a kind of, again, similar to Colin Healy, a kind of tricky enough spell period with results with Pats over the last, well, this season, especially because he had a great second half of last season with Pats. But the work he would have done at Drogheda, where he would have been working with a very low budget, would have been a part-time squad, would have had players who weren't maybe quite experienced and needed to have brought in a structure to them, and he worked wonders with Drogheda, and you kind of feel as if that's exactly the kind of boost morale-wise, but also just organisationally, that's what will be needed now for Cork. But it kind of felt, listening to Colin Healy and how angry he was after the game against Bowes, just talking about the referees, almost like, because there was a couple of instances, long he was too, he couldn't have had too many complaints about the sending off, but it kind of just felt as if, you know, maybe something was bubbling there. And then, as Liam Buckley was saying there, like he tried to get him to stay, and it was very much his own decision, you know, and you have to kind of respect him for that in a sense, you know what I mean, that he maybe felt, you know what, this is actually better for himself to actually step away here, because he can't go any further with that group of players. And that's the thing there with Cork, because you listen to their owner, obviously Dermot Usher, who would have came in, like he was at the start of the season, his kind of focus and the way he was talking was he wanted to see Cork kind of challenge towards the middle to top half of the season. It was kind of, I wouldn't say kind of he was being a bit silly to be talking about Europe, but like, I suppose as anyone who's in charge of a club, they're going to want to, obviously, especially at the start of a season, they're going to want to inspire a bit of confidence with the fans and all the rest of it. But you can tell they're so far off being able to challenge for that. But this next appointment now, in terms of steadying the ship for the rest of the season, making sure that they don't get dragged into a bit of a battle with UCD, or even staying in and around that kind of relegation playoff. But it's just an interesting one. I don't think it's necessarily a case that, as Liam Buckley was saying there, that this was a view to bring in Liam Buckley in because they knew this was happening. Like, it did seem as if, I know. You're looking very skeptical over there now, because it does seem to be this case. I was only talking to John Russell, the Sligo Rovers manager, about this last week, where he was kind of saying that the whole process now of sporting directors and technical directors is kind of more than likely going to become more prominent within the League of Ireland, in terms of, like, there's a lot put on coaches to try and do everything, like the old school, and like, it's kind of draining.
With all of the clubs now having academies, the sporting director or the technical director oversees all that as well.
Well, that's at times. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, you see, like, you kind of see, say, a Shamrock Rovers, say, with Stephen McPhail, and that's a kind of a hybrid technical director / almost coach version, because he'd be sitting on the bench a lot. Well, he would be all the time with Stephen Bradley. He's like part of the staff, but then also is that sporting director, you know.
And then they obviously have Shane Robinson, who looks after the academy side of it.
But on that, with the Cork situation, it just strikes me as a case of someone like Colin Healy, very kind of headstrong individual, very kind of confident individual in himself, and was able to actually say, you know what, enough's enough, and he was able to walk. And
Declan Devine said today, the Bowes boss, that there's ridiculous expectations on managers and this are on teams, and it's leading to managerial changes so early in the league. Is that what it is, or are we expecting every team to win every game?
Yeah, well, from a fan's point of view, every fan wants their team to win every game. Well, you look at it from
happy with mid table.
There's a lot to be said for mediocrity, you know what I mean?
Yeah, keep your expectations low.
And do you know what? I think if Cork were a bit, only a couple of places up, and maybe looked as if, do you know what, they look a bit more of a stronger outfit, I don't think this would have happened. It's like, even what happened with Pats, it's like, fans maybe, I think fans and owners surely can accept they're not going to win every single game. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's one team will win the league, a couple of teams will qualify for Europe, you're going to drop points. It's like, you want to just see a sense now that, especially with coaches that, and with managers, that, you know, that there's a kind of a plan in place here. You're going to see a bit of improvement. Fans want to go and they want to be entertained a little bit. Like, we're at a point now in the league over the last little while where I don't think it's necessarily a case of, oh, well, you have to guarantee entertainment every single week just to keep fans coming, because look at some of what's happened with Pats over the last while, and their attendance is, like, they had over 4,000 at the match against Sligo on Monday night, and like didn't have a shot on target. The previous night away from Derry didn't have a shot on target, you know. So like, it's not necessarily a case of they're going in expecting, you know, they have to be thrilled just to turn up, but you kind of need to see a sense that there is improvement. And yeah, when results go against you, of course you're going to come under pressure. That's just the nature of it. Like, it's, I don't think that's ridiculous to expect. You know, what happened last season, the reason why Declan Devine is in a job now with Bohemians is because last season Keith Long, after doing a great job for a huge amount of years, just kind of ran out of road a little bit, and the change comes, and naturally that just happens in football. Like,
Stephen Ferris is with us as well to talk about the URC. Stephen, just to, and I know nobody likes when you compare other sports, but when you look at a situation and all the situations in football now where managers, they only get a certain amount of time, and if they aren't hitting the level of expectation, then they're gone. That culture doesn't seem to be there in rugby.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I suppose throughout this season, there's been a number of coaches who have been under the pump and their job has maybe been brought into question. But then they seem to, you know, get a run of games, especially at home. I think home advantage is so big, especially in the URC. And even the likes of Ulster, was at 5 or 6 defeats on the bounce. And then, you know, they got a couple of good home games and they got themselves back on track. So, yeah, I think it's certainly different in professional rugby. And, you know, even look at Eddie Jones in the international scene, you know, people were calling for his head for what seemed like forever, and I know they made a decision in the end to bring in Steve Borthwick, but it just seems to take a lot longer. And we all know that there's significantly more money in football at the highest level, but even further down the leagues and in the Irish League, and you know, there seems to be a lot of change. So fortunately for me, I haven't really been in a position, or wasn't in a position throughout my career, where there was, you know, changing managers 2 or 3 a season. And I think, you know, a lot of change can upset things. So, you know, maybe football needs to take a leaf out of Ulster or out of rugby's books, and, you know, try and get a bit more consistency and stick with managers and back them instead of just getting rid of them.
Yeah, because even, look, I know you mentioned Ulster there, and Dan McFarlane did have that blip around Christmas, January time. And look, I just suspect that if it was in football that he would have been out the door, and there was, you know, a few kind of testy press conferences, and he did call the players into question and all of that. And now look at him, and we're going to be talking about them in a second in a URC quarter final, hoping to beat Connacht. And, you know, he's turned the ship around, and things go well for him tomorrow night, and whatever comes up after that, like, who knows how the season could finish. Are you confident that it can be a successful season for Ulster now?
Yeah, do you know what? I know I've said this in the show plenty of times. I think Ulster punch above their weight and have done over the last couple of seasons. It's funny that, you know, there's a number of guys that are starting tomorrow night for Ulster that aren't going to be there next season. I think it's 7 guys who are in the 23 that won't be around. And, you know, there is a lot of turnover when it comes to players, but not so much in the coaching staff. And I think something else that's slightly different with rugby is that, you know, you have your head coach, you have a forwards coach, you have a backs coach, you have a skills coach, you have a scrum coach. You have so many different guys in there where the responsibility and maybe blame at some stages of the season, especially if the forwards aren't going well, you know, that can be quickly passed down to the other coaches, where in football it just seems to be the head guy that takes the brunt of absolutely everything. And you know, Dan's come under question numerous times this season. There's still rumblings going on, even though they're in a home quarter final, and if they win that, they'll be in a home semi final. That, you know, it's still a little bit of an unsettled camp. And, you know, reading between the lines, and you know, I think former players have said this as well, that you know, it's easy to keep the guys happy that are playing every week, but the guys who are maybe leaving at the end of the season and aren't getting selected or moving on, you know, those are the guys that you have to try and keep on side and until the season is actually over, because they're the guys holding the bags, running the plays, you know, that they'll be running the attack plays of Connacht against them in training and making sure that they're razor sharp come match time. So you know, it is very, very difficult to keep a squad of 40 players happy. And I suppose if you look at how Chelsea have got on this season with so many players, that's a great indication of, you know, sometimes less is more. So, yeah, I'm positive that Ulster can get a result tomorrow night. They've won the last 3 against Connacht. Connacht had a good result in Belfast in 2018 and another one in April in 2021. So they can come to Belfast and win. They've got a really strong squad announced. Finlay Beelam, who has been exceptional all season, in green of Connacht and green of Ireland, and you know they're really going to put it up the Ulster. But I just think that home advantage will be you know really significant in the outcome of the game.
Yeah, Bundiaki and Matt Hansen are both named in that team for tomorrow's game, which is live here tomorrow night as well. We're having an extended show, so do tune in. Connacht's discipline is getting a lot of focus at the moment, as particularly against Ulster. They've conceded 23 penalties and one yellow card in the games against Ulster this season. How big an issue is it for them, and why does it seem to be such an issue against Ulster?
Well, when you give away penalties, it's usually because you're under pressure, and that's what Ulster are very good at doing. And Connacht, when they seem to give away a penalty or two, they you know add more to that and give away another couple, and then all of a sudden they find themselves down on the scoreboard. But one thing with Connacht is that they will never, ever, ever back down from a challenge. And when you bring guys back in, winners like Bundiaki and Mac Hansen, and even somebody like Tiernan O'Halloran, who's you know won a Magners League or Pro 12 it was back then. I think the final was over in Edinburgh. And the guys, you know, some of the guys in the pack, and they're going to be a match for anybody when they're fully loaded. It's just the bench that they've brought on in their last few games hasn't been up to the same standard. And you know, even their last match against Glasgow, they're in it the whole time, but then you know when they brought on their bench, they seemed to go into their shells a little bit. So they're a quality outfit, and I'm sure Andy Friend, this could possibly be his last game as he moves on. And you know, something to be talking about is their discipline and making sure that they don't give away cheap penalties, because we know how strong this Ulster Mall is. I think they've got the best stats in the whole of European rugby when it comes to how effective their mall can be. So, you know, that'll be something that they'll surely try and keep tight and work on, and, you know, try and relieve a bit of pressure. And I think a lot of that, Marie, has to come down to the controlling of the game. And, you know, Jack Carty, we've seen play some brilliant rugby this season, but also some mediocre rugby. And you know, for Connacht to stand a good chance of winning this game, the captain of Connacht, Jack Carty, is going to have to play out of his skin.
Yeah, it's a big game for everyone involved, really. And you mentioned Andy Friend there, and coming to the end of his tenure, he was speaking to the media. He knows it's a big game, but he's pretty happy that he's got a fit squad. Let's hear from him.
It's certainly right up there, mate. I remember our first year, we had a very similar quarterfinal against Ulster up there, and that was a big week too. We've had some big games, big moments. But, yeah, certainly if we live in the present, this is definitely a huge week for us, and probably the most important. I feel like we've had knockout games for the last 7 weeks, so we all know what the score is if you don't win. But we're not zoning in on that. We're zoning in on our performance and what we think we can do, which will get us the win. So it's been a really good week. It's been I think the fact it's a Friday game for us as a team is a good thing. I think the boys are ready to play. You know, I've been in the past, I've worked with teams when you get into these knockout stages and you're going to win things, and the teams that are healthiest at the end of the season, they're healthy for two reasons. One, I think everyone just wants to be a part of it, so we've got a lot of bodies back at the moment. And secondly, it gives you an indication of, you know, the quality of the work that's going on behind the scenes with our medical team and with our athletic performance team, as well as the coaching that's going on in terms of keeping bodies fit at the end of a big season. So, yeah, a lot of people putting up their hands. A really good training session just completed there. And selection's always tough at this time of year when you've got, you know, the quality of what we've currently got, and some good players will miss out again, unfortunately.
Stephen, why is he so happy that it's a Friday game?
that's a good question. I'm not really sure.
Player thing that they really like Friday nights. I don't know.
Yeah, like personally, I love playing on a Friday night. Friday night lights, especially in Belfast, always a brilliant atmosphere. You know, people finishing off work and maybe going for a food or a drink, and then heading to the stadium. And yeah, it's going to be a brilliant atmosphere. I think it's a sellout as well, and they'll just be chomping at the bit. And he mentioned some of the players that, well, he didn't say their names, but some of the players that are being left out. But, you know, they fought their way into this position. The start of the season, the way trip to South Africa, they were rock bottom of the table for a few of the first weeks. And, you know, with a great win in the Dragons, Edinburgh, I know they lost to Benetton, but, you know, a brilliant win against Cardiff, and you know, got something out of the match against Glasgow. So they've put themselves in this position. It's a knockout game. it's one night where if you perform at your best, you can, you know, any team can beat any team, and he'll think that his team's in with a chance, and you know, I certainly think they're in with the chance as well, and you know, it's going to be a great night in Belfast.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about the Mall and the statistics. So Ulster do lead the way with Mall tries. They've scored 16 and they topped the Mall metres made with 467. We were talking earlier about how the different coaches and the different people at the backroom team get credit or come under fire when things don't go right. Who gets credit for the success story that the Mall is?
Yeah, it's not something that you usually talk about all the time, Ray, is how good a team's Mall and how effective it can be. But Ulster, the majority of their tries, as you say, I think there was a stat out in Ulster's last game, and you know, Darcy Graham, the Edinburgh winger, had scored like 11 or 12 tries, and the whole back three of Ulster had only scored 7 tries between them and during the season. And if you think that's Jacob Stockdale, Rob Balakoon, Mikey Larry, you know, guys, international quality wingers and fullbacks, and they're just not getting the tries, and it's because the Mall has been so good for them. And like Tom Stewart, top try scorer, you know, took the record there a couple of weeks ago, and I think he's actually not embarrassed, but he's like, you know, a lot of them have been just dropping over the line from 2 meters out. And I'm sure they will be going after that again this weekend against Connacht, because when you're in that position as a forward, especially, and you know, you get a Mall try, it sort of, you know, it sows a seed of doubt into the forward pack of the opposition, that you've got the upper hand, the physical dominance. And you know, Ulster didn't get any change out of their Mall against Edinburgh, and you know, we're under huge pressure in the opening 20-25 minutes of that match, and you know, you'd expect a team like Connacht to take advantage of that and maybe get a few more points on the scoreboard if the same thing happens. So, yeah, it's a huge, huge weapon. And to answer your question, it has to come down to Roddy Grant, who has just signed a new contract there a couple of weeks ago. He signed on for another 2 years. I played against Roddy, obviously a player at Edinburgh, played for Scotland, Zimbabwean-born guy. And, you know, he's very much into his detail and analysing the opposition and how to get edges and corners and get the Mall rolling. So I think, you know, fair play to Roddy. And, you know, he's getting the best out of the players that he has there in the pack. And, you know, their Mall is so, so effective.
Okay, so you are predicting win for Ulster there, am I right?
Of course.
just be safe, you know. Leinster and the Sharks is on Saturday at 5 o'clock. Of course, Leinster do have a lot of important rugby coming up, starting with this, you could say. But the expectation is they should be strong enough to get the job done. Is there a chance, though, they could get caught on the hop, maybe have their eyes on bigger prizes?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the easy thing to say when a team is going so well, or obviously India final in the Heineken Champions Cup, and you go, oh, maybe they take their eye off the ball a little bit. You know, it was a brilliant win against Toulouse. Maybe they got it a little bit easy in that game. Will Leo Cullen make a few changes? You know, a lot of guys in his outer squad have played a lot of minutes in the URC. Will he reward them again with you know, some more game time in a quarter final? The Sharks are obviously missing Etzebeth, the giant second row that's, you know, such a key figure for them. They're also missing their captain, Sia Kalise, who's all, you know, a big doubt for the Rugby World Cup, the Springbok captain. That's two, you know, big losses. But they've got a, you know, a really strong front row with Mbanambi, you know, leading the charge from hooker. So they will be physical, and they will cause Leinster a little bit of trouble. But it just feels like Leinster at home at the Aviva Stadium, you know, the Aviva seems to be a home away from home now, and they're just in such a rich vein of form and on a bit of a roll. So yeah, like, I think the bookies have it something like 20 points, so you know, you'd certainly think that Leinster are going to win this one and win it comfortably.
And what about Munster and Glasgow Warriors? Is this an evenly matched game, do you think?
This is the game of the weekend. This is the one that I am looking forward to. I'm going over to Glasgow.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm there. I'm going to be working the game, and I'm super, super excited. RG Snyman, will Tagburn be fitting enough to start the game? You're going to have Peter O'Mahony, Jack O'Donoghue probably in the back row as well. Big Gavin Coombs, who's been scoring a rake of tries as well. And then, you know, maybe the dilemma at out half, but we'll wait and see what happens. Frisch has been unbelievable at 13. What a signing he's been. And you know, the back three players, they've plenty to choose from. Unfortunately, Keith Earls isn't going to make it, and I think his, a bit like Johnny Sexton, as he played his last game for Munster, no, he's not, or he signed on until just after the World Cup, so we'll wait and see how that all pans out. But I really give Munster a fighting chance, and they will be hurting, Marie. They will be hurting after that demolition job that Glasgow gave them in Thomond Park, especially in the first half. I think it was 31-0 or 31-7, something like that, going into half time. And you know, I've said this all week, you know, something like that will hurt the players. It will hurt Graham Rowntree, and he will be looking at a reaction, and he will be looking revenge, and they'll be so up for this match, obviously on a 3 or 4G pitch, so it should be fast, ferocious, physical. And I'm going to go, and we've been saying this all season, we're sort of, well, over the last few months, we're sort of waiting for Glasgow to slip up. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a team that you just expect them to fall over at some stage. And I'm going to say it's going to be on this weekend, and Munster are going to go over there and get a result.
I think Munster fans will be very happy to hear you say that. But do you think there's going to be concerns about the Munster defence? And I think, look, if Glasgow don't slip up or they don't go go full throttle, that'll be fine. But they do have a very potent attack.
Yeah, they do. Like, you know, I think Munster conceded 22 points against the Sharks, 24 against the Stormers, 50 against the Sharks in the Champions Cup, 38 at home the Glasgow. They're just in 42 at home the Scarlets. Like, that's a lot of points in their last number of games, and it's certainly an area that they need to sharpen up on. They are playing a bit more fast and free flowing, a little bit more off the cuff as well, which has been brilliant to watch. But you know, it's the other side of the ball that wins you the big games, and you know, that's something that they got to get right. Especially, you know, they've been giving away a lot of scrum penalties this season, and Glasgow will be coming after them. I was over in Glasgow for the Glasgow Ulster game, and Glasgow took them head on up front and won that game easy enough on the night. It was a terrible night as well. And you know, they do have the physical power, but it just feels that when you add in, you know, people say that one or two players can make a big difference, and I think just one player can make a huge difference to a team. And RG Snyman fit and ready and raring to go. He missed the last game because of a concussion, so he'll be absolutely chomping at the bit to get out there and play in such a big game for Munster, considering how much time he's missed because of the repetitive knee injury. So yeah, it's going to be an epic encounter, and one that I feel Munster are just going to nick.
Okay, Stephen Ferris, as always, thank you so much for joining us, sharing all those thoughts and also your views on rugby management. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We have plenty more to come, including a look back at last night's Premier League and tonight's, plus our regular women's football slot. RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM. Welcome back. We are going to turn our attention back to football. David Snaid is still with me in studio. Rebecca Cray is with me on the line. We're going to have a look at last night's Premier League games. Manchester City beating West Ham United by 3-0. But the big talking point, David, was that Erling Haaland has set a new record, or he's broken another record. So he has scored 35 goals now in the Premier League. He surpassed the previous best held by Andy Cole and Alan Shearer. And he got a nice little bit of recognition, I thought, by his teammates afterwards. I wasn't expecting that, were you?
Oh, they kind of did the little tunnel.
Tunnel and he ran through.
Yeah, because like, you normally get now, you know, from players, you know, like it's always about the end goal, what happens at the end of a season. Mm. So for him to actually recognise that when the season's still in the title race, you know, it kind of shows you as well of maybe the character of the fella in that dressing room.
Do you know what? They really like him as well.
Yeah, in fairness, that is one of the things that you're looking at, that like that they're not gonna do that for someone who
isn't sound.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There could be lads who in dressing rooms who would score all those goals, and because they score the goals, they're tolerated.
Yeah.
Despite who they probably are as personalities and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then you kind of see it with Haaland, and it's mad. Like I've been fortunate. Again, it's been fortunate to watch City live for a couple of times this season. Once when they played Southampton and Gavin Bazunu was in goal, and the Cruz was a comfortable win, and he scored in that game, but he missed a couple of chances, and you're kind of thinking, like, another striker would kind of wilt after missing a couple of those chances, maybe saying, God, you know, it's not my day and all the rest of it. But he just kept on going. And then back in January, it was over when they played Wolves. And again, he was coming up against Nathan Collins, you know, and you're basically was there just to see, well, Nathan Collins up against Erling Haaland, how is this going to go? And I think for the first 35 minutes, I don't think he touched the ball. And I was thinking, like, I was making me notes as this was going along, and you're thinking, like, Nathan Collins is looking very comfortable here. He's looking assured. Like, he was doing some unbelievable things on the ball, like spinning away from Kevin De Bruyne with a Cruyff turn on the half volley. It was insane. What some of the stuff he was doing. And I remember...
Sounds like a game of FIFA.
Yeah, I was bizarre. I remember I was texting one of the lads and just said, like, Collins not in the game here at all. He looks totally disinterested. No word of a lie, I'd say the message I just sent, and he just climbs all over Collins, absolutely bullies him, and powers a header in from a De Bruyne cross, you know. And you just, in that instant, it kind of just kind of shows you what he can be about, where, and even with City, whereby he's not in the game whatsoever, he might not be making an impact. He could be doing stuff and making different runs. You hear Gary Neville talking about it, and it is when you see him live and you see the amount of times that he does actually do the little kind of make little darts for a run, or come short, or spin off, or try and do something, and he might not always get it, but he just keeps his head. He doesn't get overly frustrated or kind of throw a bit of a wobbler and knock him out of the game. And that's what kind of makes him so impressive. It's the reason why he's got like 35 Premier League goals. But if you look at it from City's point of view in that game, like West Ham, they do great for 45 minutes, and then it's a set piece that undoes them, and then it kind of just shows you what that City team are all about. And like, considering that it was in February, around the 15th, 16th of February, when the Premier League brought all the charges against City for the, like, 100 different charges in terms of the financial rule breakings that they've been accused of now, that they have to kind of answer for over like a 9-year period. And you're thinking, like, could this be something at a point when Arsenal were really kind of in control of the title race, or were looking at business, could this be something that could derail City season? And it just shows that the players have just maintained an unbelievable focus since then, like, to not let that distraction of all those charges against the club, and what could that actually mean in terms of the gravity of what it would mean for the Premier League, that the team who have dominated could be found guilty of this, and this is something that's going to be prolonged now over the next, you would imagine, number of years as they defend themselves. So, like, the fact that City have in that space of time dropped points in one Premier League game out of 12, won 11. It's been an incredible kind of run of form that they've come on. Like, people, like, I know, again, Gary Neville seemed to be getting an awful lot of stick when he kept on saying this is going to happen. This will happen where City will click into gear, like a lot of the best teams have done. Like Liverpool, in fairness, did it with City, but then City were able to still get over the line by a point or two each season. And now City have just been able to grind Arsenal down. They did it to West Ham last night. It was inevitable. The finish was great from Haaland, and now, like, they've got one more game in hand, isn't it, on Arsenal? Mm-hmm. And Arsenal have Newcastle at the weekend as well. And, like, you just can't see anybody able to see, you know, going on to win the league.
I'm going to the second leg of the Champions League semi-final, the Real Madrid City one in the Etihad. So I will be on Haaland watch, and I'll be reporting back just like you. Yeah. Rebecca Cray is with us as well. Rebecca, Liverpool beat Fulham 1-0 last night. Are the top four hopes still alive for Liverpool, do you think?
Yeah, you'd like to hope so. You know, they're chasing United there now. I think they're 4 points off them at the minute. So, like, you know, look, you'd have to think they're still very much in it. You know, I think as a Liverpool fan, I very much doubted them this year. You know, I didn't think it was possible. But look, they've come a little bit into form now in the last few games, and thankfully got another win there yesterday.
David, Man United are playing Brighton at 8:00 tonight. I'm going to put you on Team News Watch. You're so good at keeping a check on that. Rebecca, just on the Women's National League this weekend, there was a few surprise results. Rovers and Pimount drawing probably is good for the overall picture of the league and keeps it really exciting. But I'd say the drama was probably reserved for Karen Duggan and Amanda Budd and housemates, and Karen missing that penalty in the closing stages for Pimount. I'd say it was an awkward breakfast table the next morning.
I'd say so, yeah. I think it's the first thing that came into my own head. I was thinking, Jesus, I wouldn't be going home there tonight. I'd be shipping off back to Kilkenny for the night. But yeah, look, I can imagine they're both professional enough to know, and look, they shrug these things off. But look, it's kind of one of them. Your stomach dropped for Karen looking at that. You know, 89th minute. In fairness, it was a decent save from Amanda. She got down low into the corner and managed to parry it away around the corner. But Yeah, look, I heard it was
practicing them in the garden.
Probably. It was like summer barbecues last year were high, like. But yeah, no, most definitely. Look, I heard it was a fantastic game, probably one of the better games in recent times for the league. I think over 100 or 650 people, a P-Mount record, you know, up there as well. So yeah, look, it's not a bad draw for the rest of the league. Yeah, or result, I should say.
Let's hear from Shamrock Rovers manager Colly O'Neill. He was speaking after that nil-all draw between Rovers and P-Mount.
I don't think we even deserved a point out of it. I thought P-Mount were probably the better side. So to take a point out of it, yeah, I'd be very happy to take a point out of it.
Amanda Budden proving her worth, not just with the penalty save, but there was even a couple of saves after that.
Yeah, she's brilliant. I think the reason we tried to sign her is because she's the best goalkeeper in the league, and she can do performances like that. I think she is now on the lookout for a spare bedroom tonight, because she does actually live with Karen Duggan, and I think the locks have probably already been changed.
It's interesting and delighting to see Savannah McCarthy start for the first time today. Normally see her in a defensive role. She was playing a part in midfield today.
Yeah, we just thought she could do a nice little holding role in there for us because of her experience, because we knew what kind of game this was going to be. It's going to be a little bit different. Maybe when we go to Tallaght Stadium, we'll play it in a different way. We knew it was going to be a tough place to come. It would be a bit of a battle. And when I'm taking the positives out of it, it's good that Sav has more minutes under our belt, and that even though all the pressure that was thrown at us, we still didn't wilt us. So yeah, there's still some positives to take out of it.
Yeah, it's definitely good just for the game itself to see Savannah McCarthy back, isn't it, Rebecca?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think it was our goal to get back, obviously, just before the big summer ahead. Yeah. I don't know if that's something that's still in our, you know, in our her mindset. I'm sure it is, but it's great just to see her back domestically for now. Yeah.
Let's move on to Shelburne and Wexford Youths. Disappointing result for Shelburne, and of course, look, for Wexford getting a narrow win, it's still a win over Shelburne.
Exactly. Look, you know, no one remembers performances, you know, only results. And I think being at the game, you know, Shells did dominate possession, you know, they just couldn't get that goal. You know, Rihanna, again, coming up trumps, you know, she's just one of those players. She's just scored from nothing. And you know, her strike, you know, just Courtney Maguire was just unlucky. It just bounced in front of her for them to score. You know, you're looking at, I think, a half time, the kind of word went around that there was a draw in Green Oak, you know, so it was kind of like, right, let's motor on here and try and get the 3 points. But unfortunately, you know, it just wasn't to be.
Jessie Stapleton, I saw those pictures of her going off injured. How's she doing? Have you heard? Or is she... concussion was the suggestion.
Yeah. And no, I was obviously a bit of a scare on the day. She got two impacts. And I think one was on a corner. Was a header. So yeah, just she dropped. She lost. I think I don't know. She's saying she thinks she lost consciousness at one point, but she came off. She wasn't in the best state. But thankfully, you know, quick medical staff at Wexford, and she headed up to the general hospital there, got checked over, and she's grand. So I was just telling her she's probably been a bit of a drama queen on the day, to be honest, but she's grand now. Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah, it's great to see her back, and as you said, there's so much at play this summer as well. Galway still getting the wins,
still chipping away. Yeah, look, they're still going along, and you know, in a great run of form at the minute. Jenna Slattery just can't stop scoring. You know, again, Gemma McGuinness on the score sheet as well there. So yeah, not a bad result at all coming up to Dublin and beating DLR 2-0.
Athlone Town then beat Sligo Rovers at 3-1. Sligo still continuing with that difficult season so far. You'd hope to see them getting some sort of results, but Bohemians on Saturday might be the place to go. But the big game this weekend is, I think anyway, Athlone Town in Shelburne.
Yeah. I think it's a return of the President's Cup fixture that we had at the start of the season. I think Shells will be looking to, you know, brush themselves off and stamp a bit of authority on the league this time round. You know, they've, I think, more of a point to prove now than ever. You know, obviously, Athlone have beaten them once already this season. They're coming off the back of a defeat to Wexford. So, look, yeah, it's definitely going to be a great game, I'm sure, between the two. Tough going down there, as always. You know, the crowd get behind them. But, look, I'll have every faith in the girls to get results.
You've been busy going to a lot of games. I saw you over at the Arsenal-Wolfsburg game. It was so dramatic. I thought I was going to go to penalties. I was devastated for Arsenal. But what an occasion for the women's game, for Katie McCabe, even though she didn't get through, but to lead out her team, to be captain on a day like that, and for it to be such an entertaining... They put on a show as well, Rebecca.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing, you know, to be there and I suppose be part of history with that attendance record. You know, I think, I don't know, you've probably seen the post 10 years ago, they had 1,400 at a game in Bournemouth and 60,000-odd, you know, at that game the other day, which is unbelievable. And it wasn't just women's fans, you know, there was Arsenal men's supporters there as well, which is fantastic to see. But yeah, look, obviously an amazing time, devastating for the girls, you know, being there. I was only saying, I turned to Grace Maloney, who was sitting behind me, I think, and I was like, I don't think I've ever felt so defeated, you know, and low from watching a game, because as you know, Arsenal are so depleted currently, you know, they've X amount of players out, lower than Wien Royster went off again. You know, it's insane. But yeah, look, great performance. They dug deep. They did what they could with what they had. Jen Beattie going up top and scoring headers as well, which was fantastic. But yeah, look, I'm devastated for them, and I'm devastated for Katie. But you know, I was talking to her the other day, and she's, you know, look, getting the head down now, trying to get a Champions League spot for the rest of the season. Yeah,
yeah, and stay injury free, crucial.
That's the thing. I've been echoing those things to wrap yourself up. Yeah, most definitely.
Rebecca Gray, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break. David Sneyd is on Team News Watch for Man United and Brighton. I don't know, 8 o'clock kickoff. We're not sure we're going to be able to come through. We have Jeff Shepherd and American Sports to come very shortly.
2FM. Game on 2FM.
Welcome along. Welcome back. Jeff Shepherd joins us on the line to have a look at the NFL draft. So, Shep, who are the winners and losers?
Hey, Marie, how's it going? So, look, you know, the thing about the draft is this. It's held in the spring, and as they say, hope springs eternal, right? You know, I mean, it's just an opportunity for a team and a fan base to kind of cleanse their palate, especially if they had a bad season last year. And so, look, I think you need to kind of, just at any overview of the NFL draft, you kind of have to start at the top, right? And so you look at the Carolina Panthers, who traded up into the first position with the mindset of, we're taking our next quarterback of the future. And they went, and there was no kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say there was just this giant clear-cut favorite. You know, there wasn't a Joe Burrow or somebody like that in this year's class. There were three or four pretty good quarterbacks that I think they could have selected from, and they decided to go with Bryce Young, the quarterback that has been in Alabama the last couple of years. He's a little bit of a smaller guy, but he's got a huge arm. The interesting thing, Marie, is I think he weighs right around 200 pounds, and so he's one of the smaller quarterbacks that's been drafted in the NFL really over the last like 25 years. And so, you know, we talk about durability. I mean, you know, you're an NFL fan. You've seen these games. I mean, these dudes are flying all over the place, knocking each other down. You know, could that play a factor, you know, in his career as he moves forward? But I think the Panthers were really happy with the selection. I think Bryce Young was happy to go there as well. And then right behind them, the Houston Texans selected C.J. Stroud out of Ohio State. He's a bigger guy. And then right after that, the Texans traded back into the third spot, and they selected Alabama defensive end Will Anderson. And so they had arguably the number one and the number two offensive and defensive players in this year's draft. They gave up some stuff to get, you know, to get that Anderson pick. But I mean, you have to think, if you're a Texans fan, hey, these guys are all in on changing the culture and changing the results here. So I think, you know, those were kind of the big headlines. You know, the one of the quarterbacks fell today, you know, to the second day that they thought might get picked in the first round. But there wasn't really any, you know, to me, there wasn't anything shocking. The Philadelphia Eagles, you know, the runners up last year, they drafted a couple of more players out of Georgia, which is a wise move, as Georgia's won the last couple of national championships. So, you know, they continue to, you know, to build up with really great players on their defense in Philadelphia.
It sounds like you enjoy the draft.
Well, again, you know, my wife was making fun of me. She's like, do we have to watch this, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you just, I mean, it's on. It's good to have in the background. But again, you know, I mean, I felt that the Saints, you know, my team from New Orleans, you know, they addressed a lot of the needs that they had. Mm-hmm. They traded a player away. You know, I mean, that's what it's for. And look, Marie, there are studies that, you know, that go back. You can look at the history. The teams that do well in the draft typically do well in the NFL. I mean, yes, there's lots of splashy free agent signings every single year, but you know, to be a good team in the draft consistently, that is how you lay the base of a foundation of a solid franchise.
Okay, Chef, thank you for bringing us up to speed on all that happened in the draft. Look forward to seeing how all of these guys get on. We will check in with you again soon. We're nearly out of time. David Snaid, any team news?
No team news, unfortunately. No Warden Evan Ferguson.
That's all we were interested in anyway. Okay, that is all we have time for this evening. We'll be back tomorrow. We do have that URC quarterfinal between Connacht and Ulster live commentary. So join us for an extended Game On tomorrow evening, plus our usual show of looking ahead to all of the weekend's sports. So much to get through. And Jane Mangle will be looking ahead to the Kentucky Derby. So lots not to miss. Betty De Silva is up next. RTE 2FM.